morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, folks. Mike Costantino here.
Gabe Steve Williams is on the day off.
We have a special treat on Democratic Perspective. We have Jason Joseph here,
local boy made good.
We have to say that right up front. Jason is an editor, a reporter. Somewhere in the great land of Washington, D.C. He's worked for Roll Call. Yeah, he works for it. But he's also there writing all the stuff that you guys hear in Arizona on fake news.
Jason, how are you this morning? Good. I gotta say, the easiest way to describe my journey is I've gone from the valley to the swamp.
And proudly so.
I like locales.
They suit me well.
A little more humidity in Washington, but same basic premise.
Well, it's better for your hair.
Yeah, absolutely.
Different kind of animals in the swamp and the desert here. Yeah, maybe the same result.
What you have is a wonderful Arizona.
You guys have a view of our guys in what is really their natural habitat.
John McCain lives down the road here in Paid Springs, Arizona, by the way. Put that on the record so nobody confuses it with cottonwood.
So when they start, or corn, or any number of ways it's described. That's right.
But you see him where he actually does his thing. And of course, Jeff Flake, as we were talking before we went on the air, is now a big deal because he's been anti-Trump. And Democratic Perspective here, we spend our every moment doing anti-Trump. One of the things I want to talk about our senators and their behavior and what we know about them and where they're going to go with some of the things that are happening. But I also want to talk about the legitimization of Donald Trump. People like you legitimize what we consider just an anomaly. And maybe after a year, people like me are being stupid, silly, unrealistic. But to legitimize fascism, and we're not. You have to still pretend to be unbiased, I assume. We don't pretend. We're a partisan show here, and so I can say things like fascist regimes and legitimizing a fascist regime seems like a mistake for any journalistic enterprise. But yeah, you work for people. But before we get to that late conversation, let's talk about what's going on with Flake and McCain in D.C.
Okay, good. Yeah, and I'll just say that where I work, Roll Call, we're not a partisan news organization. We pride ourselves on not having a slant. We do have columnists. We run op-eds, and we try to keep that as many perspectives as we can. It's been interesting, in this last year or so. I mean, you talk about the way news organizations conduct themselves, handle themselves. Some people take a different tack than others. But in general, I mean, Roll Call, where I work, we're interested in covering, the everyday life of Capitol Hill, and most of the time, like now, that involves big policy debates, like the tax bill, and over the summer it was healthcare, and before that it was the Supreme Court and the confirmation process of Neil Gorsuch. But it's also other things, and that's when we were founded in 1955 as a newspaper. We were founded by a guy by name Sid Udane, who saw a gap in the coverage. I mean, he saw that everybody was covering really just legislation on the Hill, and he wanted to show that this is a place that's pretty dynamic. There's the Congress, but there's also 27,000 people roughly who work for the legislative branch of the United States. It's like a town or a college campus.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
And so that's where we that's where our perspective comes from. And I mean, granted, this is an extraordinary time we're living in. I mean, I think that in 100 years we will see, you know, like people will look back on this and say, wow, what happened? What just happened?
Before we leave the history of roll call, where do you place it on the right-left spectrum?
Oh, I mean, we pride ourselves in being right down the middle. I mean, like, we go for as nonpartisan a coverage. I mean, it's tough because everybody brings to it their own perspective, their own biases,
of course,
as editors, reporters. Yeah. But we try to be as neutral as observers as we can. I think where we usually fall is in trying to explain what's happening on Capitol Hill. And that has the way we've approached our coverage of Trump. We do have a White House correspondent, is trying to explain how his behavior, his policy positions, his decisions, his tweets, what kind of effect they have on Capitol Hill specifically, because that's our niche. We're not on some areas, you know, we're just not going to be able to compete with CNN and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post. We have to carve out our own kind of way of doing things. And what we try to do is make sure that we're looking at both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, and because Congress does tend to get kind of neglected. In this world, Trump sucks up a lot of oxygen.
That's right.
And he, you know, he commands a stage, and we're like, okay, we still have all these people who are shaping how much we're going to pay in taxes every year, whether we'll have health insurance or not, whether there will, you know, like any number of big things that affect people's everyday lives.
Tell us as much as you can about John McCain's health care vote. And this, as people know, a Democratic perspective here, we may be in Podunk, but because of this show, people are kept up with all the latest. And here at Democratic Perspective, well, we also say things like reason has a liberal bias in this world today. If you're not lying for the other side, and we use the word lying here, by the way, we don't talk about misspoke or anything, we say lie. If you're not lying for the other side, then people will assume that you're some sort of, because reason has that liberal bias I talked about. If you're just telling the way it is, then you're a liberal rag, and you just must get used to it. But we want to talk about John McCain's healthcare vote.
It was easily the most dramatic vote and scene I've been exposed to in my time covering public policy. Before leaving for Washington, when I was still in college, I interned at the Arizona House of Representatives. You know, I helped, you know, kind of analyze legislation as part of I was an intern for the staff of the House Natural Resources Committee, and you know, we read legislation, and it was an extraordinary time. It was 1993. Fife Symington was still governor. I've been through that at that level. I've been in student politics myself, at NAU, when I graduated from there. And
Symington, one of our two impeached, governors, I might add, go ahead.
And also, you know, like, and has reinvented himself as sort of a person searching for UFOs. So, I mean, he should move here to Sedona, right?
Exactly.
I moved to Washington in 1998, and you know, there have been some really dramatic times in Washington. I was not there for 9/11. I was actually working in West Virginia. I was teaching and also working in the AmeriCorps program during 9/11. So I missed that. I mean, that probably, you know, gets into the pantheon of people, of places of dramatic events if you were in Washington at the time. But you know, Supreme Court justices' deaths of former presidents, you know, terrorist threats, all manners of things that affect Congress. And that vote, you know, which was coming at the end of a very long day in this Votorama process that it's part of this process that they use to avoid filibusters. Both sides have used it. Republicans tried to use it to make sure that they could, pass their health care repeal, the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, by only using their own votes, only using Republican votes. So it put a premium on the votes of just a few Republicans, because you could lose two but not three and get to 50. If you get a 50-50 vote, then you can bring the vice president in and he breaks a tie. So a lot of eyes were on McCain. He, you know, he had his brain cancer diagnosis earlier in the year. He had returned. That was another sort of moment that shook people, you know, because McCain is, yes, he's a senior citizen, but he is, you know, it didn't occur to a lot of people, I think, particularly people who work on Capitol Hill or report on it, that he would ever not be here.
McCain is a giant of the Senate, yeah. To quote somebody who we can't talk about yet, his title of his book.
Right. And he's also just a, you know, he's a tough, you know, guy. He's a little mean. He's very funny, you know, in person. I mean, he's just this. He is a singular personality. And again, I don't know him that well personally. Sure. I work with people who are actually, you know, close to him. You know, like a friend was a defense reporter, and she's gotten to know him over the course of 20 years nearly. And she was shaken up, you know, by the news. So McCain comes back, you know, and he comes back after getting cancer treatment here in Arizona. He makes this dramatic floor speech during a couple of days before the debate about how the Senate is special and the Senate deserves, you know, to retain the rules that make it distinct, and it should be a place of great deliberation, you know, as befits any body that calls itself the world's greatest deliberative body. And it was this. People were thinking, is he just saying this to set everybody up, or does he really mean it? You know, and that's, you know, that's an unfortunate thing with politicians.
You have to
kind of have this kind of qualifying moment in your mind, like, that sounds really great, but is it BS or not? Yeah. I mean, like, and most of the time it is BS. You know, there's a lot of highfalutin rhetoric that happens on the United States Senate.
And then you get
floor.
To the but or the however.
Right. Then you get and then they, you know, people vote their own way, or they vote the way that doesn't seem to comport with what they just said. So McCain, you know, gives this very fiery speech about returning to regular order. And that's the thing about this process that they're using, this budget process. It has to fit within these budget rules in order to remove the threat of a filibuster. And McCain really, you know, he zeroed on the fact that they did not have any hearings about this, that it just sort of came over and there was this big, you know, rush on everything. And he thought, you know, this is something that's going to affect millions of people, you know, and across the country. And, you know, in the way that he conducts his own committee, he's the chairman of the Armed Services Committee. He was able to get a unanimous committee vote on behalf of the defense authorization bill, this bill that sets policy for the Pentagon. Talk about a hornet's nest. I mean, everybody has like regional interests going on. Sure. They have partisan interests. I mean, there are as many different philosophies when it comes to how we should conduct wars base closures. And I mean, just take your pick. So he takes his time with this bill, and he works with the top Democrat on it, this guy named Jack Reed, who's a Rhode Island Democrat. He's also a veteran. He's a West Point grad, and McCain's a Navy Academy grad. And, you know, they got a unanimous committee vote on this thing. It's not something that happens
in these partisan times. No, I would imagine.
So McCain, you know, so it's like, okay, maybe he's really serious about this. And then, you know, he kind of played coy. I mean, either charming or infuriating or both at the same time aspect of McCain is that he is a showman. He likes to dangle people along. He likes to sort of, you know, the repartee of dealing with the press and people. And, you know, the night of the vote, because you have a certain number of hours that you can consider these bills under the reconciliation process, and it always leads up to this big votorama, they call it, where people can literally write down their amendments on a cocktail napkin and submit it to the clerk, you know, basically. I mean, it's kind of a wild process, but everybody knew where this was going.
Right.
It was going toward, you know, taking up what they called the skinny repeal. Not everything, that they wouldn't be able to repeal everything about the Affordable Care Act, but they thought that they could get enough and then they could punt it back to the House and maybe the House would improve upon it. Little game that they play all the time. Right? Right. Nobody likes this, but let's put it on the other guy to, you know, fix things, right?
Right.
And so, you know, everybody knew where two Republican moderate senators were, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine. They had already come out and said, we're going to vote no. So that put them at 50. So if it really came down to McCain, And McCain, you know, kind of played this up, you know, on the way to the floor. Right. You know, people were asking, you know, how are you going to vote? He's like, well, stick around for the show.
Yeah,
you know, he
kind
of winks. He likes to wink, you know, a lot, you know, in these sort of things. And he knows his audience. And he went to the floor and, you know, you could just see this sort of, you know, Republicans getting really kind of uneasy. And Mike Pence was there on the floor.
Just in case.
And people tried to, you know, McCain went over and he started talking to the Democrats. He talked to Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. He took a seat. Mike Pence came over to try to, you know, kind of talk to him. Jeff Flake sat, you know, like trying to talk to him for a while. Lindsey Graham, his best friend in the Senate, like started trying to talk to him. And he obviously looked like he was kind of enjoying himself. We found out later that, like, he was called into the cloakroom, these little side rooms that senators can kind of hang out for little times and take phone calls and so forth. You can't use your phone on the Senate floor.
Oh.
He went in and he actually, you know, took a call from Donald Trump, who was imploring him to vote to repeal this thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he came back out and, you know, just very, I mean, like, everybody kind of knew where this was going at this point because the word had spread in the gallery. I was in the press portion of the gallery. It was kind of packed, and it was just really, you know, everybody was just, is this really going to happen?
Yeah.
Is this? And he just kind of, you know, took a look at the desk. And the way senators vote, it's like, it's either archaic or charming or a little bit of both. You know, they look at the clerk and they give a hand signal. And so you can do this in many different ways. You can raise your index finger for I. You can, you know, go down.
Yes.
You know, you can use your thumbs. Some people are dramatic at the back of the floor, and they'll say things like, you know, Mr. Schumer votes I. You know, they'll refer to themselves in the third person. It's all, you know, kind of geeky fun for us. And he just came and kind of like held his hand over like you know, a Caesar at the Colosseum. And just said, no, and like did the you know this quick thumbs down, and there was just this gasp, you know that went through, and you can hear it on C-SPAN, you know, like it's a little muffled. That's the only cameras that are, you know, really allowed. It's actually a Senate feed that C-SPAN picks up. It's not C-SPAN cameras.
Oh, that's right. That's interesting.
And it was just this, you know, this moment of just deflation for the Republicans and elation from the Democrats.
Yes.
And to the point where Chuck Schumer turned around and told his people, calm down, you know.
Wow.
You know, it was and this is happening at 1:30 in the morning, too.
Yeah.
So everybody's tired and it's like, and you know, people of staff and reporters and senators, everybody has been there it's overtime. You know, some senators, it's a. The average age for some senators is, you know, this is the warm milk and cookies time of the day, you know, for a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, people can get a little cranky
they
at 1:30 in the
morning. Medicine already, and they needed to go to bed.
And it was one of those moments where, I mean, from McCain's perspective, regardless of what the relative merits are of the Affordable Care Act, and he has voted several times to repeal it.
Right.
As part of different, you know, pieces of legislation, this was him saying, "No, there is a process that we've set up, and we want to make sure that this, like, this, has a chance to work."
That's real important to note that this is McCain's vote about the process, about the dignity of the Senate, and we hope some of us, a Democratic perspective, hope was a little bit in your face, Donald Trump. That you come and mess with my, you know, this is a Robert De Niro moment. You mess with me, and it's in language that Trump would understand,
right? And you know, it is that's one of those things too. Like how much of this? I mean, there are the noble parts of this. Like the Senate should have a process and it should stick.
That's true.
And I like that you brought that up. And then there are the maybe slightly ignoble moments of like, you know what, this guy. I spent 5.5 years being tortured by the North Vietnamese, and I kept my mouth shut and I wouldn't get in line because they wanted to release me because my grandfather and father were admirals. This guy had bone spurs and he dodged a draft.
Yeah.
Like, and he's calling into question my heroism and my courage and my valor
from day one.
And of the campaign. So it's hard to imagine that some of these thoughts didn't creep up into John McCain's thought process. But again, he stuck his line. His sort of talking points were: there's a process, and we're ignoring it, and we devalue the legislative process. We devalue politics because politics is about bringing people together and trying to figure out solutions from many one.
What about the tax cut? Is Jeff Flake going to vote against the tax cut?
You know, I find it very difficult to imagine that many Republicans are going to vote against a tax cut bill.
No matter how much it hurts the middle class.
Right.
No matter how $4 out of $5 goes to people of $200,000 or more. No matter how much I don't get a tax cut, that people at $50,000 are going to pay more in taxes. This is the worst that the deficit's going to be $1.5 trillion in no time, and then they're going to start cutting. We had a call from Washington yesterday, from the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and they were telling us that this tax cut vote, if Jeff Flake and John McCain vote for it, and those two other women senators vote against it, that it's going to take $25 million out of Medicare because it's going to automatically, and there's going to be nobody's fingerprints on this. It's not like this just talking.
Yeah, this is a reference to the PAYGO statute, it's called.
That's right. Very good.
Which is actually put into place by Democrats in a previous life when they control the majority. And it basically states that in the case of, when you're taking in more money than you're paying out, the other way around, when you're paying out more money than you're taking in, you have to pay for it some way, and if you don't specify how you pay for it, then these are the programs that will get an automatic hit, and this haircut or this sequester or automatic cuts, however you want to call them, they would start pretty immediately.
Yep.
Now the what a lot of Republicans will tell you is we're not going to let that happen. We'll just waive those rules, and just like they're saying that the tax cuts that expire, this is part of the Senate tax bill, the tax cuts for corporations are permanent, as permanent as anything is.
Right. Right, yeah.
Your moment of existentialism.
Yeah, that's right.
Jason Dick. But the tax cuts for individuals would expire, the individual rate cuts would expire, within this 10-year window that, again, this is part of the budget rules, that they're using the reconciliation process so they can avoid a filibuster. So they're saying, oh, well, we'll never let that happen. We're never going to let the tax cuts expire because, just look at the Bush tax cuts, 2001, 2003. Those were all used with the budget reconciliation process. They were on a 10-year window.
Right.
And we came up against the fiscal cliff, it was called, in 2013. They were all scheduled to snap back.
Right.
And we extended them. They extended them with about a minute to go before the new year. But the fact remains that even if that is the intent, that they'll waive rules, the fact that they're just going to do a little wink and nod,
right,
and go back and make sure that nobody is subject to these taxes when they expire. What they have right now,
that's right,
the way things are happening right now is that's the statement of policy, and so you don't really ever have to do anything once you pass things, and so it's a bit of a it's a little bit of high stakes poker.
Well, and when the Republicans come
with people's health insurance, with their pensions,
and when the Republicans come to you and say, "Trust me," that's got to raise a lot of red flags all over the place, not to mention the rank and file like me, but also people that actually matter that are out there. By the way, we want to make sure we mention, we're talking to Jason Joseph Dick, your local boy Mingus graduate?
Cottonwood Junior High graduate.
Cottonwood Junior High graduate.
And then I went down to Phoenix for high school.
So. All right. Well, you flaked out. And
I fled.
Arizona high school graduate. Let's get that. Anyway, as a Washington reporter for Congressional Daily and Roll Call and other things in Washington, and is filling us in on some of the things that our guys, John McCain, Jeff Flake, are up to. You'll have to come back to town again because we could spend three more shows talking about the House and Kirsten Sinema. I'm sure, at least I hope we would be able, and I'd bring pictures, by the way. And so that's what's going on here, folks. We want to talk, and the other thing that's looming here over this, as we about to go into Thanksgiving break, Jason is going to tell us about the horrible tax cut votes. And this other thing that's come up in just in the last 48 hours is this thing on net neutrality. The FCC is about to take away your internet and make you pay more for it if you want to be able to get online within 15 minutes.
So should we start? You want to talk about tax cuts first?
Let's talk about tax cuts. Yeah, sorry about that.
Before we go into the telecom world.
Yes. I count on you to keep me organized because you you have to. You have deadlines and stuff.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I crack the whip on deadlines more than I usually fail to meet a lot of
those.
There you go. So on tax cuts, we don't know what timing is at this point. The House has voted for their tax package, and it's different than what's taking shape in the Senate right now.
Right.
They do not include a repeal of the individual mandate to purchase health insurance that would, you know, is a sort of the linchpin of the Affordable Care Act.
The House bill does not.
Okay. The House bill preserves some of your ability to deduct state and local taxes, particularly property taxes. And a lot of people in high tax states like New York, New Jersey, California, they pay a lot in property taxes and local taxes, and you can deduct that currently from your federal tax burden. Well, that goes away for the most part, except for up to $10,000 of property taxes in the House bill. The Senate just does away with it entirely. They also repeal the individual mandate for the Affordable Care Act. There's a lot. There are some pretty key differences, but the health insurance and the SALT, the so-called SALT deduction, are biggies right there.
Right.
In differences. So the House has passed its bill, and that's going to go over to the Senate. The reason there's a little bit of procedural alchemy going on there because the Constitution states that all tax bills have to originate in the House. So even though the Senate is working on its own bill, they're really going to be taking up the House bill,
right?
And they would be replacing it, and considering it,
Just to be clear, what the Senate comes up with would go back to the House.
It probably would, unless they just pass the House tax bill.
Oh,
which they could do.
I see.
That they could do that,
and then it would go to Trump.
Right. So right now the ball is sort of in the Senate's court. The Senate Finance Committee, which is the committee that writes tax law, they have passed their own legislation. This is very nerdy. So the House and the Senate tax writing committees, they consider legislation differently. In the House Ways and Means Committee, they consider legislative text. Like literally, they look at the Internal Revenue Code and they change it according in committee, and then they can change it if they have that ability to do so on the floor. The Senate does it a little differently. The Senate does not consider, when it's in committee, they do not consider legislative text. They don't look at the Internal Revenue Code. What they do is they do what they consider, imagine this, plain English. They consider proposals in plain English so that senators might actually know what they're talking about and understand what the virtues are. After they pass it in the committee, then it goes to the staff, and the staff will convert it. They'll translate it into legislative text.
There you go.
So it's a little different. So that's why we typically at this stage haven't called it a bill in the Senate, because it's not in legislative text. So we call it like the measure or the evolving legislation, I realize that.
Well, that's nerdy.
I can do some serious geeking out here on this. So the Senate, like they just released the legislative text of it after approving their version in committee last week. What the ultimate goal is for the Republicans, the Republicans say they want to send this bill to Donald Trump's signature by Christmas.
Right.
That is a pretty ambitious timeline for the differences that are out there right now. And one of the things that, you know, like one of the reasons that Flake and McCain are both so important in this process,
yes,
is that the McCain has said this actually is, because it's going through a hearing and people have the ability to change the legislation, it is going through regular process. So that seems to be meeting.
Unlike the ACA, by the way.
Right.
You know, that, and when you were talking about, I made a note here to talk about when Obama was considering this health care proposal bill.
More than a year of hearings.
A year of hearings, you know, we're talking about more and more hearings. Right. And then for them to come back and have no hearings on this really, really important legislation where, and I got to keep saying this, that people were going to suffer and die because of lack of health care. And we can't just ignore that part. You know, it's not all politics. Right. But go ahead.
McCain has said that he, at this point, he's fairly satisfied that there is a regular process going on, you know, that through the Senate. Now, he has not tipped his hand about how he feels about adding to the deficit. He has voted against tax cut bills before, uh-huh, during the Bush administration, because he thought that it was going to starve the military. Surprise, surprise, it did. there were less revenue to the government means less revenue for everyone, including the Pentagon.
But there's nothing starving about the military.
There's nothing starving about the military
at this point,
in relative terms, particularly to other parts of the government.
And it would explode the deficit.
It would significantly increase the deficit. I mean, adding $1.5 trillion. I mean,
yes,
the original plan, you know, when they were beginning to talk about this sort of pie in the sky tax reform, they wanted it to be deficit neutral. You know, in 1986, when the last time they really overhauled the tax code, they basically raised taxes on businesses in order to give individuals tax cuts.
Right.
So they lowered the individual rates, by taxing, you know, businesses a little higher, and also by removing a lot of loopholes, you know, in the tax code, or, you know, deductions. Like they're loopholes are part of law. You know, they're as legit as red stop signs.
I agree.
So, this kind of does the opposite. This simplifies the tax code a little bit, but it also, I mean, the benefits are predominantly toward the wealthiest and corporations. So this, the deficit part of it is what Flake may have an issue with, and McCain too. Flake has said that, you know, he is concerned about the deficit. I mean, he made his bones, you know, in conservative Republican politics in Arizona by saying, you know, the government shouldn't spend more than it takes in.
Just to interrupt you, are giving us a background on the votes of our senators, Jeff Flake, John McCain, on how they might go on this all-important tax. I can't call it reform because it's not. It's a tax cut for rich people and for corporations.
Reform is kind of a loaded word, too, because who's against reform, right?
Exactly. I sent a message to C-SPAN telling them to take reform out, and they did, by the way, by the end of the day, and I'm sure it was my my message that did it, by the way.
Guys, Kaz sent us an email.
That's right. That's right.
Rush this.
Late reform was because they were, you know, they put all these things on Facebook and they ask about it. Anyway, about people to send in their opinions, and they didn't say tax reform anymore. It said tax cut. It was just a different editor, a different guy like you got around to it. But I do want to. So do we have a bottom line? I know I'm asking you to predict.
McCain and Flake have not sort of drawn these lines, so these bright red lines.
So we don't know.
So we don't know. And also, what's complicated about it is that the politics of healthcare are different than the politics of taxes, and particularly in the Senate.
That's true.
So one of the things
that's very true.
The issues that the Senate was wrestling with was you have a lot of senators, you know, Republican senators who represent small states, states, you know, small population states like Alaska and Wyoming and places like that. They receive a lot more benefits, you know, particularly under the Affordable Care Act. Like, you know, you increase the Medicaid rolls, and that enables people to get health insurance. Like any kind of alteration of that, like, can really significantly affect like vulnerable populations. This was Murkowski's reasoning in voting against the Affordable Care Act repeal over the summer, is that this would Alaskans would get hurt by this.
Right.
So it's different with taxes, because there really are no Republican senators who represent big states, big populous Democratic states, who are disproportionately disadvantaged by this tax package. So New Yorkers are going to really, you know, take it in the gut if they can't deduct their state and local taxes from their tax burden.
Yeah.
New Jersey, California, Illinois.
Okay.
These are all Democratic states. They're all Democratic senators.
Yeah.
And, you know, the low tax states, the biggest populated states, like Florida and Texas, they don't have state income taxes. So it's like not an issue, really, for people in their population. So what's getting even more complicated with somebody like Murkowski is, yes, the health care stuff is if you repeal the individual mandate, that can really complicate things for her. But what they've been very smart, they've introduced a way to raise some revenue in the Senate version of this by drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska. And
this has been a
30-year-long goal.
Yes, it has.
For Murkowski, for her father, Frank Murkowski, who was the senator and then governor, for Ted Stevens, the late Alaska senator, for Don Young, who has represented Alaska as its at-large House, you know, congressional representative since 1973. I mean, this has been, and also this is a bipartisan thing in Alaska too.
Oh.
When people have, you know, Mark Begich, who was the last Democratic senator, he was all for drilling in Anwar.
So they got it, So, if
Democrats are thinking that they might be able to get Murkowski,
yes,
that is high, very optimistic. Because this may be the closest she gets. These chances for Alaska only come around so often.
Are there any dark horses out there that we don't know about that will vote against this tax?
So right now, Ron Johnson, who is a Wisconsin senator, he's a conservative. He was just reelected narrowly, outperformed Trump in Wisconsin, but he defeated Russ Feingold, who he defeated in 2010 also. He doesn't owe anybody anything because basically the National Republican campaign, you know, chairs and committees, they kind of wrote him off. They thought, well, he's going to lose.
Right. Yeah.
You know, his reelection bid last year. So he doesn't owe anybody anything. He's also rich. He can kind of do whatever he wants. He said that he opposes the tax bill. And he hinges his dislike of it on the fact that smaller, you know, kind of pass-through companies, S corporations, limited liability companies and so forth, don't have the same kind of advantages that like the bigger companies, bigger corporations.
Yes. I have an S corporation.
So he's concerned about that. For a while he was opposed to the healthcare bill too. That's one dark horse.
Okay.
Right now he is currently opposed to both the House and Senate versions.
Do you have a drinking buddy we can call? I'm going to move on here.
Another dark horse is Bob Corker, who has also had his issues, personality issues with the president. He has said in the recent past that he doesn't see himself voting for a tax bill that adds a penny to the deficit. And he's also retiring, like Flake. And so he doesn't owe anybody anything.
It really should matter to them. It really, really should. I want to talk real quickly about your podcasts. Mm-hmm. Speaking of podcasts, you get on the mic with Jason Dick. Here has his own podcast.
It's rollcall.com.
Oh, okay.
We have a section on rollcall.com for podcasts. We also have all, you know, all kinds
what's the
of
name
goodies.
Of it?
It's the Big Story Podcast.
The Big Story. Not too humble, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, I got that. That's good.
But we're actually going to introduce some new podcasts soon.
And what is the mix. I like the title of your last. All politics is
state and local.
All politics is state and local.
I talked with one of our columnists, a guy named Walter Shapiro, who's a great, you know, kind of observer. He's funny. He wrote a book about how his grandfather, who was a vaudevillian comedian, trolled Hitler during the 30s. I mean, he also is just this astute observer of American politics too. He's a really great guy. Anyway, we talked about this that, you know, this is the politics of this are weird. You know, because Democrats again are on an island, they have to, if they want to stop the tax bill, they have to get Republicans to vote against it. And So the podcast, that's the last podcast. In general, what we do, though, is we try to figure out what is going on.
Good. One of the things I want you to take up, you and your gurus, is are the Democrats going to win in 2018? I mean, are we going to pull out the House, the Senate?
The people smarter than me, prognosticators, are saying they're seeing what they saw at this stage in political cycles in 2010 and 2006, which is, you know, in 2010 the Republicans got the majority in a wave election in the House, and in 2006 the Democrats reclaimed the House in another wave election. The elections in Virginia a couple weeks ago, where Ralph Northam, the lieutenant governor, beat Ed Gillespie, who's an establishment Republican. You know, he won easily, in what looked like was going to be a tight race, which suggests that Democrats are motivated. They're more motivated. The administration is not popular. I mean, the president is popular with his base, but his base is small. It's 30 to 35%.
I have to interrupt you and say that. And speaking of getting out the vote, Democrats at the Red Rocks support Democratic Perspective, and we thank them for it. And as I said, when I was on the board of DOR, they have one job and one job only: get out the vote. That's it. Actually, I add a few expletives to it, but we're on the air right now. And that's really the only job of any political organization. One job. You have to get your side to vote. Republicans have been much better at it as of late. But thank you, Dora, for your support. Good luck on your office. When Jason's in town, he'll volunteer some time over the office, I'm sure.
Doubtful as a nonpartisan journalist. Doubtful, but I'd love to talk to people.
Drop
by and talk about.
We want to thank Steve Segner and his crew over at El Portal for supporting Democratic Perspective. And don't forget, you can find when Jason decides to run for office, or if you just want to use it to blackmail him, these things are found on bbid.org. All our podcasts are found on bbid.org, and as some of the candidates we've had in here and some of the politicians have realized, when their opposition uses their quotes against them, it is written on ink on the World Wide Web. I want to thank you wholeheartedly, but we do have a minute left. And we want to, before I have at least our parting shot here on net neutrality. Mm-hmm. What?
So the FCC has, and its new chairman, who is formerly just a regular commissioner, he's now the chairman, is a guy named Ajit Pai. They have proposed to repeal net neutrality laws, which would, you know, basically say you can't favor different organizations or different content managers or so forth. I mean, you can't like set up lanes where people pay a little bit more.
You know, I'm fine with keeping 10-year-olds from seeing pornography. I'm okay with
that. It's not that. It tries to ensure that people have equal amount of access to the internet. This is more complicated than that, but. The main thing, I mean, I think particularly for your audience, is that this is an Obama era rule, and they're going after, they've gone after a lot of Obama era rules, particularly ones that are
other reason than they were Obama era rules.
It seems to be. I mean, although again, there are big philosophical differences on this. But that's what's true. Even more interesting, though, is that that's something that would, you know, enable like bigger, you know, companies to charge differently, like according to models, for internet access. What's fascinating, though, is that over the Justice Department, the Justice Department has just sued to prevent the merger of AT&T and Time Warner, which is like kind of the opposite. It's like the opposite side of the teeter-totter. So the Justice Department and the FCC, both run by Republicans, are doing different things that affect telecommunications. And it's kind of a fascinating time.
You know, the fact that anything associated with Trump is confusing does not surprise anyone, at least on this side. For you guys, I know you expect it. We want to thank Jason Joseph Dick, a local boy here and reporter and extraordinaire at Roll Call.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.